Delighted to say we are now joined on the line by the leader of Fianna Fáil, Micheál Martin, TD for Cork South Central. Micheál, thank you very much for taking your call. Good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon. You're very welcome.
Very quickly, just before we talk about many of the other things which are pressing, just one issue which arises in today's papers, just to get your thoughts on first and foremost. A story you'll have heard in the news headlines there. These latest Votegate allegations surrounding Lisa Chambers and Timmy Dooley. Have you been in touch with either of those TDs this morning to establish what's going on?
No, I haven't this morning. And I just read the newspapers. Timmy Dooley is adamant that he was in the house. We know that there were lax practices in terms of deputies from all parties, from the Taoiseach down, who would have voted for other colleagues whilst they were in the chamber. In other words, they would have pressed buttons for colleagues who were in the chamber. And that seems to be the situation here. No different to what has happened across the board.
Lisa Chambers says this morning that she believes the government is under pressure with the Darren Murphy scandal and is attempting to deflect back from that issue. Do you agree?
Well, I think that was very clear from yesterday's interview by the Taoiseach that he's doing everything he possibly can to deflect from the Darren Murphy scandal and his own role in it in terms of he acquiesced in the decision, welcomed the decision of Darren Murphy to become Director of Elections for the European People's Party over 2 years ago. Because he put the Taoiseach and many in Fine Gael see, you know, the party's interest as the country's interest. And the bottom line is that I think the Taoiseach has not faced up to the moral issue that underpins the Darren Murphy case. It's not just about turning up or fobbing or those issues, important as they are. It really is fundamentally about the representational role of a deputy and the legislative role of a deputy. And clearly Darren Murphy didn't fulfil either over the last 2 years. His input into the parliamentary process was virtually zero. And he was not on the ground in Cork North Central for over 2 years. And that's what has made people angry on the north side of Cork, because they felt they had an absentee TD.
Why do we believe that Darren Murphy, I mean, obviously there are questions to ask because of how Leo Varadkar sanctioned this second role for him in Brussels, but equally there are other TDs who are still around Leinster House, who are still getting their full salary and full allowances, who don't contribute much to parliamentary life. We know Enda Kenny has barely spoken in the Dáil in the last couple of years. I don't think Michael Noonan has spoken in the Dáil since he stepped down as finance minister. He hasn't asked a PQ since January 2018. Why don't we ask questions about whether they are equally doing enough to merit their full allowances?
Well, I think in terms of former Taoiseach, there has always been a custom and practice that once they had left office, depending on the amount of time to go to a general election, that they took a back seat, essentially. That has always been custom and practice, irrespective of party. But what seems to have happened here is I think there was an arrangement made to do with the numbers, the Fine Gael numbers in Leinster House, and that when the Taoiseach decided not to carry on with Darren Murphy as a minister, in other words, he removed him as Minister for State, Darren Murphy said, I'm heading to Europe to work for the Fine Gael party in Europe. And I think that was known. It seems to me, no, if you look back at the statements that the Taoiseach issued at the time, he more or less says that Dara isn't leaving politics, he's not leaving Fine Gael, and he's not leaving he's leaving the Dáil, but he's not leaving politics in general, and he's not leaving Fine Gael. So I think it was a poor judgment by the Taoiseach, and he has failed to call out really what was I think an unacceptable practice from a young TD like Darren Murphy. In terms of the behaviour, since because the people were not represented.
Just on the point about what has become known as Votegate, when will Timmy Dooley and Niall Collins be reappointed to your front bench, if at all?
Well, I mean, as I said, I took immediate action when that became known, and took action in terms of removing both from the front bench. And Jack Chambers is now dealing with the communications and the climate change agenda, along with his defence responsibilities. And Sean Haughey is dealing with foreign affairs. And that's the position as of now, and that remains the position.
When will it not be the position? Or is there any scope to review that after the conclusion of this?
Well, I did say at the time, I was making that decision pending the outcome of the Members' Interest Committee, because I didn't want to prejudice the outcome of it. The position is as I've stated and will continue.
What do you make of the fallout of the British general election and Boris Johnson winning such an overwhelming mandate to deliver Brexit?
Well, there's two things about the election. First of all, I think it has to be acknowledged that there was a significant shift also in Northern Ireland. I just want to say that first, and like Colin Eastwood and Ciara Hanna had incredible majorities, extraordinary turnarounds in terms of both those constituencies. from the last general election, and Stephen Farrey from the Alliance, and Michael Savage of the SDLP came within 1,600 votes. It's interesting, Sinn Féin lost close to 7% in Northern Ireland, the DUP lost over 5%. And I think the people of Northern Ireland were very clearly saying to politicians, get back to work, get the Assembly back up and running, get the Executive up and running. And I was on the doors in Derry, was on the doors for the local elections. The anger of people in the North towards absentee TDs as well is equally strong. In terms of Britain, I think clearly the Brexit issue did dominate. I think the Tory campaign was far better in terms of the clarity of its message. I think Boris Johnson was relentlessly and ruthlessly on message for the entire campaign. And whether we like it or not, and I think there are problems for us arising out of the campaign in the sense that the simplistic slogan of get Brexit done resonated with people.
Was it true? Is it a correct slogan?
But it'll be far more difficult to get it done. And getting it done in an Irish context means, if Boris Johnson follows through, means Britain leaving the customs union, which is bad for Ireland, bad for our trade, bad for our exporters, and particularly for the agri-food industry, where we sell our food on the shelves of British supermarkets. And no, he may soften, but we've no guarantee of that. And if history is any judge, we know that Conservative leaders tend to be imprisoned or can tend to be paralyzed by their grassroots, by their ideologically driven grassroots membership, and indeed members of the parliamentary party.
So yeah, there are some who think that the massive parliamentary mandate that he has now might give him scope perhaps to relax some of those or be a bit more pragmatist. You clearly don't share that view.
Well, it may, but it may not. I would accept that Boris Johnson, throughout his political career, has a capacity to move from the right back into the centre, and back to the right and back again. But just to remember, David Cameron looked to be completely in charge after his significant election successes, yet had to cave in and have a disastrous referendum, a calamitous referendum, which led to the entire Brexit debacle and mess. And, you know, Boris Johnson has given a lot of hostages to fortune during the campaign, and he has difficult people still within the parliamentary party and within his membership. And remember, many of the moderates were purged in advance of the general election. But he may pivot back, but he is determined to take Britain out of the customs union.
When you say he may pivot back, and you've talked about how he's gone from the centre to the right, to the centre to the right again, can he be treated as an honest broker by whoever is residing in the Department of the Taoiseach?
Well, I think in terms of dealing with any prime minister, they're all governed by the circumstances of the moment to a certain extent, but also in terms of what will drive them, the imperatives, if you like, for their country. In other words, the realities of Brexit will come home to Britain as well. The realities of seeking access to the British market, to the European market.
And the quid pro quo is about us needing access to theirs and their waters.
And you can't have it your own way. You can't have it your own way. And that reality will come home. And there are very difficult negotiations ahead. And I just hope that we don't see ourselves back next Christmas into a further sort of, you know, gun to the head and no deal Brexit or this. But I suspect we won't. I think we're in for a long period of negotiations on trade and on other matters relating to Brexit, because it's an enormous issue. And I can recall one diplomat saying to me, this will go on for years, if not decades.
You mentioned the success of the SDLP and also the Alliance north of the border. We now have a situation where of the 18 seats in Westminster, Nationalists hold 9 and Unionists hold 8. It's the first time that that's ever happened. It's also the first time that Unionism has won less than 50% of the popular vote in Northern Ireland. Do you believe it is now time to plan for United Ireland?
Well, I think the first point I would make there, of course, many of those Nationalist MPs won't take their seats in Westminster, so effectively...
But their electorates knew that, yeah. And they still elected Nationalist MPs.
I know
MPs
that, but it's an important point, though, that people will not be represented there. And there was a lot of anger about that on the doorstep, I can tell you.
Well, one could ask why you would elect a Nationalist MP who would take an oath to a foreign crown.
Sorry?
One could ask why you would elect a Nationalist MP who would still take an oath to a foreign crown.
If you don't want to take your seat, don't go for election. Just leave somebody go who's prepared to take their seat.
So it's a part of the old formula. Is the oath an empty formula of words then?
Well, I mean, in terms of Éamon de Valera and Fianna Fáil, I mean, we dealt with that in the 20s. And dealt with it in the context of the time, obviously, in the history of the time. But my own view is, if it's your genuine view that you don't want to take the seat in Westminster, well, then don't contest the election.
Well, all of that then being as
anyway,
we still have 9 Nationalists, whether they're taking the seat or not, we have 8 Unionists.
Sorry, Gavin, yeah. Go ahead.
So we have nine nationalists now and we've got eight unionists. There's clearly now, it's the first time ever that we've had this circumstance where people are electing more nationalist MPs who want out of the United Kingdom than those who explicitly want to maintain that league. So is it time now to plan for United Ireland?
I don't accept that proposition immediately, in the sense that I don't think it's as simple as that. I think what people, my sense of what must now happen is that the politicians in the North, irrespective of their background, must demonstrate to the people that they can do the job, that they're prepared to take their seats in the Assembly and the Executive, and stop messing around.
Why do we keep linking the, I take your point, but why do we keep linking the future of the Assembly with an election in which the Assembly wasn't a central part? This wasn't an Assembly election, this was a Westminster one.
But it's about the politics of Northern Ireland, that's what the election was about. For God's sake, I mean, that's what it was about. People are fed up in the North of having no one doing the work that they're elected to do. It's palpable up there. People are saying to me, you know, we're paying politicians and 3 years they haven't been in the Assembly or in the Executive. That is the feeling on the ground in the North, Gavin. And people are angry about that, and the politicians know it. And that's why the Executive will be restored. Mark my words, there'll be lots of choreography, lots of photographs, lots of photo opportunities, tough, difficult negotiations and all of that kind of stuff for the next 2 weeks, 3 weeks. Mark my words, by the 13th of January, the Executive will be back up and running and the Assembly will be back up and running. That's what's going to happen.
By the 13th of January, you don't think that it'll have to wait for Brexit to have actually happened, so to speak?
There is a deadline there that they have to meet. Otherwise, you're back into Assembly elections.
Well, be that as it may, Northern Ireland has missed plenty of deadlines before and everything still manages to get wrong-fingered.
The politicians now know, having been on the doorstep, what the people want from them. And in terms of just the issue of United Ireland, the Good Friday Agreement is there to be worked. Within it, there is a framework for the people ultimately to decide that. And I think a lot of the whole push for a border poll has been completely wrong. And I said that from the outset, and I think the idea of conflating Brexit with unity was a mistake. Sinn Féin initially started that campaign, have driven it, and I think it was a dangerous, reckless strategy, which would do more to divide the island than unite the island.
Okay,
unity is about people, it's not about territory. And in my view, the Good Friday Agreement, if people had stopped this, collapsing the Executive every now and again, got on with, for example, North-South bodies. I mean, when Fianna Fáil were in power, we drove the North-South agenda in terms of Waterways Ireland, in terms of the single electricity market, in terms of Intertrade Ireland, and many other cross-border bodies. There was momentum there. Now their morale is sapped. And I'm a pragmatist who wants to get on with it, get the work done, and develop, for example, the linkages between on the Northwest, both industrially, in terms of Loch Foyle, for example, the huge potential there, linking in with Donegal, the McGee University, and with Letterkenny Institute of Technology. I mean, there's a lot of stuff on the ground we could be doing. Lots of politicians, it seems to me, and some political parties, will abdicate responsibility on a day-to-day basis, but will love to get into forums, love to get into all sorts of discussion areas about the next 10 years, about 20 years' time.
Oh, okay.
I'm of the view, would you ever mind now you've been elected, would you demonstrate to us all that you have the capacity to represent people in an executive and in a parliament.
Okay,
and then we can see about what future configurations will emerge.
Right,
and I think that's a fair point.
That point being made, and perhaps it is a fair point, but I suppose many people would say that if not now, if not after a Westminster election where more people are electing secessionists than unionists, then if not now, when?
But I don't draw the same conclusion that you do from the Westminster election and apply it crudely to the whole issue of the future of the island. I just don't make that. I think that's a false premise to base a discussion
so
on.
So would it need to then be another election with a similar outcome where Brexit is not on the agenda?
I think you first of all demonstrate that we can work together, utilising the institutions of Good Friday. Why are people running away from the Good Friday Agreement? There are three fundamental pillars of the Good Friday Agreement: the cross-community relationship between two different traditions on the North, in the North itself, the North-South relationship and pillar, and the British-Irish relationship. All three are essential to no matter what happens in the future on the island, no matter what political construct emerges in the next 30 or 40 years, those three pillars will still remain. Those three pillars will still have to be worked on and nurtured and developed. I think the tragedy of the last 10 years, and I think Fine Gael and the Conservative governments from 2012 onwards took the eye off the ball In Northern Ireland, particularly the North-South dimension, and the executive and assembly issues. There's a danger that people now want to just sort of ignore and forget the enormous work that was put into building the institutions of the Good Friday Agreement. We need to work them.
You have named your date, mark your words, January the 13th is a date in which you believe Stormont will be back up and running. We also learned via the page one headline of the Sunday Independent today that you've written to Leo Varadkar looking to name the date of the election. Will he be publishing that letter?
Well, I think the essence of it is there. In a number of interviews, I've made it clear that Easter is the natural end of this Dáil, of this Parliament.
So it's, that's dissolution time around Easter.
Yeah, because I don't think it's credible that we would reconvene after Easter. And the point I'm making is for the spring session, which is about 34 sitting days between now and the April the 12th, the middle of January and April the 12th, that if that is to commence, and because of Brexit and the fact that we just discussed the election, the Brexit legislation will go through the House of Commons before the 31st of January, then the Dáil will have recommenced in the middle of January. It's not tenable that the Dáil would continue on an indefinite week-to-week basis. So there has to be certainty and clarity brought to the situation.
So is that what you mean then when you talk about an orderly wind-down? Because that was a phrase that the Taoiseach said yesterday. He wasn't really sure what it meant.
He pretended he wasn't sure about it. For God's sake, the Taoiseach is saying things that make no sense and you can't believe it, to be honest. What I mean, it's as clear as anything. But an orderly wind-down means you don't have a sudden shock, sort of motion coming in on one week and suddenly there's no government. I'm saying, you know, the confidence in supply is something Fianna Fáil entered into on the policy platform to facilitate the formation of a government. It gave the country a functioning government and stability, and particularly in the context of a no-deal Brexit when there was a big threat to the country.
So what policies then need to be pursued in the time that are left?
Yeah, I think the time that's left, it's a tidying up period, really, if we're honest. There's the extension of the threshold for medical card eligibility for over 70s, which is agreed in the budget. That needs to be done so that people can get access to medical cards who are over a certain income limit, over 70. I think James Lawless's transparency, online transparency legislation, which would be of considerable help to the next general election in terms of transparency, in terms of social media and elections.
That's been on the shelf a long time, though.
But no, it's at committee stage and could easily be agreed, and all parties are behind it and support the bill. Likewise, John Corden's bill in terms of the exploitation of young children by the gang lords and the drug lords is a very short bill which could help in the fight into trying to prevent the abuse of young children. And then, of course, we have the medical disclosure bill which the government published recently, and given the cervical check scandal, I think there's an obligation on the House to pass that.
And the breast check story that's on the front page of the Business Post today as well, where again doctors are being advised not to disclose the findings of previous reviews in breast cancer patients.
Yeah, but I think that's why we do need to get that medical disclosure legislation through. And also, just finally then, for many farmers and business people, it's been a long-running saga about amending the Nursing Home Support Bill to give the farmers the same treatment as private residences, and that's been an ongoing issue, and that again is agreed across the House.
Because so you believe all of those things that you mentioned, they can all be done by Easter?
Well, they're practical things that could be done between now, if the government wants to. But the point is, we can't wander into the spring session on a week-by-week basis. That's not tenable.
That could happen anyway, though, because with the way the numbers are now, even Fianna Fáil's abstention can't save the government necessarily.
Well, you see, I think if the Taoiseach, and I'm offering him, you know, I put this on the table to the Dáil at large, really, because otherwise what will happen is tactics and manoeuvrings and opportunism will take place over substantive work, and you'll get a lot of drama and melodrama. I've no interest in that. I mean, we saw a bit of it during the by-elections when the Social Democrats, they needed publicity, they needed profile, so they put on a motion of no confidence. Big drama, everyone gets overhyped. Despite the fact that every commentator knew there was no chance of a general election on the 28th of December, and it was a try-on.
But we do know now that with the way the numbers have gone, with Darren Murphy's resignation, Thomas Pringle will be back with some of the ways, and in fact, one of your own TDs, John McGuinness, saying he would defy the party whip. We now know that if Sinn Féin were to put down a motion of no confidence, that you could find yourself abstaining in a motion, for example, in Simon Harris, and then have to go to the polls the following week saying you want to get rid of him anyway.
No, I think my point is if there's a bit of leadership shown here, and simply say to the Dáil and others, I think quite a number of independents would agree with what I'm saying, that basically, here's the date. There's no need for motions in between for a matter of weeks. I think let's get a sensible timeline to this. Easter, to me, after Easter, end of April, to me, is a logical time for an election. It's better all wrong for the people as well, I would argue. I mean, I canvassed in November, and the number of doors that were locked at 6 o'clock, I can tell you, winter's night, not good for democracy, not good for elections either, if I'm honest.
But wouldn't a lot of people say that we're in the middle of a housing emergency? We're in the middle of a climate emergency. You could argue that we're in the middle of a health emergency as well, and that if you want people to call off the dogs for a couple of months to have an orderly wind down, that some people would think that that's sort of a tacit acceptance of circumstances as they are, that you don't want them changed.
No, we do want to change a government, and there will be a change of government, in my view. It's just a matter of weeks. Like, the point is, there's no point going back on the 15th of January if you don't have clarity and certainty about that session, because you can't live from week to week. And I think there's quite a number of sensible people in the House who would agree with me on that.
So if Leo Varadkar declines to meet with you to discuss all of this, do you believe that there won't be the cause for certainty?
Well, I think there will be complete uncertainty then, and you're open to short-term tactical manoeuvrings by others by who will want to exploit that situation, and that will simply not be tenable.
Have you any arrangement to meet him yet?
And that's why clarity and certainty, not yet, no, but I've no reason to believe that shouldn't happen. But as of yet, there's no date has been set down for that. But I think it's not just, I mean, I think there are others equally who I think would welcome this clarity and certainty.
What do you make of the fact, by the way, that some of your own TDs, like John McGuinness, and there may be more, say that if push comes to shove and someone were to put down another motion of no confidence in someone, that they would be prepared to defy the whip to back it?
Well, I've made it very clear to the Parliamentary Party, and I think the Parliamentary Party overwhelmingly has trusted my judgment to date on many issues. And I'm very clear about that. And the Fianna Fáil Party will decide as a party. I've articulated this to the front bench, this position that I've outlined to you today, and that is the Fianna Fáil position.
Have you spoken to John McGuinness about his own comments?
Look, I don't have to speak to any individual in that sense, because the party supports the position that I have adopted. But I think what I am doing is giving leadership on the issue. I'm not hanging around waiting for the next opportunistic motion to go down. And I think you've two choices for the spring session, Gavin. I mean, one, you either wrap it up, or two, okay, here are certain basic practical things that will help people get it done and then have the election. Because we do need an election. Yes, the government has failed on health. We know that from this week with the shocking situation with children in Crumlin in the oncology ward, treatment being compromised. That should never happen. We're in the middle of a very difficult emergency department situation with the winter flu crisis. That's beginning. All hands on deck are needed on deck in terms of dealing with that. Housing continues to be a shocking situation, but we will have an election in the beginning in the first half of this year. There's no doubt about that. But the Dáil is due back in the middle of January. There's about 34 sitting days to Easter. That to me seems you either do that in a pragmatic, substantive way, or
you don't do it at all.
Don't do it at all.
Micheál Martin, we will leave it there. Thank you very much for your time this lunchtime. Micheál Martin, TD for Cork South Central and the leader of Fianna Fáil. Thank you very much for joining us.